Well, it's a real pleasure to be in California at the moment, coming from Canada, where we've had at least 7 months of hard winter. It's a real pleasure to be in the sunshine. So just in case anybody's in any doubt where the University of Waterloo is, it's about an hour west of Toronto, and it's home for the Perimeter Institute for Theoretical Physics, which at some point may well grow to be as prestigious as the KITP. As we go on. So I'm going to talk today about some thermal conductivity measurements in high temperature superconductors that we've been making that we made in the University of Toronto over the last 5 years. The group of Louis Taillefer had a kind of golden era when it existed in Toronto, which I hope will be continue. Now he's moved off to Sherbrooke, and this is the work I'm going to talk about. And in contrast to the previous talk, I'm going to talk about some very low energy, low temperature measurements from which actually we can extract some interesting information on high energy gaps. So it's been a project that's gone on for the last 5 or 6 years, so there's an enormous amount of collaborators to thank. I don't think I really have time to walk you through all the names. Louis Taillefer, head of the group, has obviously masterminded the whole process. The samples that perhaps are the most exciting recent results that I'll present towards the end of the talk came from the UBC group, these ultra-low doped YBCO samples, which are extremely clean, have mean free paths on the order of 1 micron, and really give us some interesting results. And a lot of the work was done by the postdocs, which have come and gone over the years, and indeed the graduate students that you see listed there. So here's an outline to the talk. It seems that thermal conductivity is not necessarily a measurement that people are so familiar with. Everybody can talk freely about resistivity, charge transport, but thermal conductivity maybe needs a little bit more introduction. So I'll walk you through a bit of that to start with. Then I'll talk about the results we have from our measurements of thermal conductivity in the superconducting state, and just ask the question, how far can we go in trying to understand our measurements within the context of just a straightforward BCS D-wave superconductor? In particular, we've been very fortunate that there are two aspects of cuprates or D-wave superconductors that allow us to make some fairly wide-ranging conclusions. That is universal behavior, which I'll explain exactly what I mean by that in a minute, and the constant nodal Fermi velocity, which is observed by ARPES measurements. It'll become obvious from this that the underdoped regime, which was the subject of the previous talk, is really where a lot of the crucial physics lies. So I'll move into that very swiftly after this. And I think I'm likely not to have time to talk about some normal state measurements at the end. But just to advertise that I do have some measurements on normal states. So if that's your penchant, then come and talk to me afterwards. Okay, so thermal conductivity. The art in making thermal conductivity measurements or interpreting thermal conductivity measurements is in extracting information from a measurement which measures a total thermal conductivity on electrons and phonons, and really we're just interested in the electronic behavior, so we have to separate it out somewhere. And the way we do this in our measurements is to use a temperature dependence in the very low temperature limit, that is in the limit that T goes to zero. And using this simple kinetic theory formulation where the thermal conductivity is related to the specific heat times the velocity times the mean free path, in the low temperature limit we know that phonons have a mean free path limited by the boundary of the sample, which is temperature independent. So the only temperature dependence comes from the heat capacity, so is T cubed. In the same way, when we talk about electrons, the mean free path is limited by just elastic scattering from impurities. The temperature dependence comes from the specific heat and is linear. So if we then plot our data as kappa, as total thermal conductivity divided by temperature as a function of T squared, then this nicely splits into an electronic part and a phononic part, where the electronic part is the intercept and the temperature dependence we see is attributed to phonons. So if we just look at the phonon sector to start with. So if I look at an insulating YBCO compound, you see that this graph of kappa over T versus T squared extrapolates nicely to zero, so we don't have any electronic contribution to the thermal conductivity, and all this is phonons. Now you might argue that this isn't a very good T cubed here, we've really just hit a tangent to this line, and that's nicely understood by some old work dating back to the early 80s by Pohl and Stritzer, where they looked at the effect of surfaces on this T cubed temperature dependence, and basically it depends on whether the phonons, when they hit the surface, whether they're scattered specularly or diffusely. And in the instance that they're diffusely scattered, one it recovers this Casimir limit of T cubed, whereas if the if your one recovers specular reflection, then the mean free path can appear a little bit longer and one gets a deviation perhaps a little bit from the T cubed limit. And so if we now allow our phonon conductivity to float a little bit, we can plot now the data as kappa over T versus T to the alpha, where this is actually floating, and we see that we get a much better phonon fit. So this, for an S-wave superconductor, V3SI, should be no electronic conductivity in the limit that T goes to zero, because the superfluid doesn't have any entropy. And for electrons, just to show you that we can measure electronic transport really well, so here's a sample of silver. You can see the numbers now are much, much larger, and because the transport is so dominated by electronic conductivity, you can really not see any phonons in this at all. And indeed, it's likely that most of the phonons are scattered by electrons anyway, so one wouldn't expect to recover this T-cubed region there. So what about for superconductors? Well, if we take a two-dimensional Fermi surface and impose a D-wave gap, we know that we get a density of states that looks roughly like this. Most of the low-energy physics is dominated by quasiparticles which exist in this nodal region where the gap goes to zero. And in the absence of any impurity scattering, we know that we have a linear density of states down in this low-energy region. And this linear density of states governs all the low temperature properties. For example, the specific heat is expected to go as T squared. But because we have a gap that gets very small in this region, we are extremely sensitive to impurities, impurity pair breaking. And the effect of impurities is to provide a finite density of quasiparticle states at zero energy. And these now, if one measures the properties in this very low temperature limit, affect the temperature dependence quite considerably. So now, with a constant density of states, we'd expect a linear, or very similar to a metallic-like specific heat, and a thermal conductivity, which should basically be linear in temperature, and will be attributed to the metallic conductivity from the nodal quasiparticles. So if I now show you some data from optimally doped cuprates, and contrast it with this insulating sample which I showed earlier. Again, I've plotted kappa over T, so total thermal conductivity divided by temperature as a function of T squared, and I find that now in optimally doped cuprates we have presence of nodal quasiparticles which carry a heat now and give us a linear temperature dependence, and that's actually now demonstrating, one would say, that the presence of this finite and linear residual conductivity establishes the presence of nodes. So we can go a little bit further now and say, well, okay, so we have a finite value, but what can we say about its magnitude? So if we now take this Fermi liquid theory of nodal quasiparticles worked out by Patrick Lee and Adam Durst and co-workers, and ask, what is the nodal spectrum like? Well, if we make a shift of axes in momentum space to center on the node, then we know we have this famous Dirac-like spectrum for these nodal quasiparticles, and it's parameterized by two velocities. In the direction perpendicular to the Fermi surface, we have the Fermi velocity, and tangential to the Fermi surface, we have this velocity V2, which is simply related to the slope of the gap at the node, and in the simplest D-wave case, this means that V2 will be proportional to the gap maximum, and we're going to make use of that a bit later in the talk, so it's important to take that on board. Now, if one takes this construct and asks, well, how big is the thermal conductivity? One finds that actually the thermal conductivity is directly proportional to the ratio of these two velocities. And there's another important aspect to note about this this equation is that it's universal. And what I mean by universal is that there's no dependence on any scattering rate in this formula, which is unusual for a transport measurement. Now, the reason for that is that the effect of impurities on the system is twofold. One is that it promotes more quasi-particles, but at the same time it also limits their mean free path. And these two effects exactly cancel one another and lead to a dropping out of any lifetime or a scattering rate in this equation. So how well established is that? Well, it's pretty well known actually from measurements, early measurements by Taillefer on zinc-doped YBCO, where one can go from having a pure system to 3% zinc and extracting the linear term, which I plot here, as a function of scattering rate. And what one sees is that the residual value remains constant within error bars across up to 3% zinc doping. And in fact, more recently, we've gone the other way. And now we take a sample which is has approximately 10 times less scattering, an order of magnitude less scattering than this previous generation of YBCO samples. And the data is shown here. And what one finds is that, again, within error bars, the error bar mainly set by the geometric factor of the sample, it remains constant. And we know that it's actually 10 times purer in this more recent sample from looking at the high-temperature thermal conductivity, where one sees a peak below TC, and the rise here is due to a decrease in electron-electron scattering as electrons enter into the condensate until it's eventually capped by some impurity scattering. So the fact that it rises to a higher value before it's capped by impurity scattering tells you that you have less impurity scattering. And roughly speaking, a doubling of the peak height here, according to the theories worked out by Hirschfeld and Puttika, tells you that you have essentially an order of magnitude less scattering in this system. And the same has been shown for optimal doped BISCO by Kamran Benyaz's group, where they use electron bombardment to increase the scattering in the system and see no change in the residual linear term. So, if we have this universal behavior, then we can take this this value of VF over V2 and compare to some other experiments. And what we find when we compare to ARPES, where they can directly measure the gap as a function of angle around the Fermi surface, and if one extracts the values of VF and V2 from this measurement, one sees that the ratio is 20 to 19. Now, there's obviously a bit of an error bar here, so maybe the fact that they coincide so well is a little bit coincidental, but nevertheless, I think the agreement is good enough to give one some real confidence in the values.
Question, when you put before that you also suppressed the superconductivity, so the gap goes down. So you're saying that for the 3% doping, there is no
I think if we go back to the data, one's starting to see some deviation from the universal behavior. And in fact, if one moves out of the universal limit a little bit, there are some theories by Mackey which tell you how much the thermal conductivity should grow. And that's what this corrected curve is a little bit here, so certainly consistent with that. So what one expects is that as one increases the level of impurities beyond the universal region, so one gets out of this region of constant density of states, then one finds that one has more quasi-particles than one has when you just have a pure system. Okay. So the other aspect that was important for interpreting thermal conductivity was constant nodal velocity. So what I'd like to just walk you through here is the ARPES measurements by Shen's group, and here is a whole series of dispersion curves for the lanthanum strontium copper oxide system, going all the way from 0.3% strontium to 30% strontium. And when one measures the nodal velocity as one crosses the Fermi surface and plots them all on the same graph, and you'll see that this extends way beyond just this limited compound itself, but into lots of other ones. One finds that by and large the Fermi velocity remains constant in these systems. So the consequence of this is that if we measure our residual linear thermal conductivity, because of the constant Fermi velocity, it's directly proportional to 1 over V2, which in the simplest D-wave case is proportional to 1 over the gap maximum. So we can now go ahead and measure over a wide variety of doping across the phase diagram and see what kind of gap maxima we can extract from measurements of residual thermal conductivity. And that's basically what's shown in this plot here. So on the overdope side, where we've used a single layer thallium compound, we've measured thermal conductivity down to very low temperatures, extracted the residual linear term, converted it to a gap, and plotted it as a function of doping here. And what one sees is that at high doping, delta zero tracks TC quite nicely. This line here is some sort of stronger coupling version of BCS theory, so delta zero given by 3.5 kBTC, and really there's a pretty good agreement between the experiments. But as one approaches optimal doping and then into the underdoped regime, where we use these very pure samples of YBCO, one finds that the linear term gets very small, and now we find that in fact BCS theory is not working so well for us, because we find that the gap maximum now doesn't track TC. It continues to increase whilst TC decreases. And in fact, what we find is that from our extremely low energy measurements of quasi-particle conductivity, we find good agreement with measurements of the pseudo-gap in BISCO. So measurements of the superconducting gap above TC in these tunneling measurements. And actually, one could put a variety of pseudo-gap measurements on this plot, and they would all agree with these measurements of the gap from thermal conductivity measurements. So you'll notice actually that there's no sign of any LSCO samples on this curve. And this I'm just going to quickly mention this, that, oops, wrong way. That we think the problem with LSCO is that it's actually not in the universal limit. So the full formula for Durston-Lee's relation between VF and VE2 as a function of kappa over T, or T, kappa over T as a function of VF over V2, is that there's a minimum in this curve. And what we find is that our values of residual linear term actually dip below the minimum in this expression. And so it's likely that really LSCO is not in the universal limit. And we can also track the level of disorder in a typical optimally doped LSCO sample by again looking at this peak height below TC. And what one sees is that whereas for these YBCO samples one has a considerable peak here, you dope it with 1% zinc, nearly 2% zinc, and that you severely suppress this peak. But in LSCO there's really no sign of any peak when looked on a normalized curve like this. And so, roughly speaking, the comparative levels of elastic scattering in these various samples is that these very pure YBCO samples is 1, the previous generation of YBCO samples is 10, and LSCO is roughly speaking, 2 orders of magnitude higher levels of elastic scattering.
And is that consistent with resistivity also? Or this is all phononic what you're talking about?
Consistent with so these are superconductors. So you could have a look at the normal state, but I don't think you're dominated there by elastic scattering.
So it's not resistive elastic scattering, something else. We didn't
look at the magnetic field. Well, you'd have to apply a really large magnetic field to get the residual resistivity in these samples. And in fact, it's well known that LSCO goes insulating. So it's difficult to get a measure of elastic scattering from other measurements in these systems, other transport measurements in these systems. But you might look at Hall, maybe. That might be able to tell you something. Hall thermal conductivity. So let's just summarize and conclude from this part of the talk. Basically, we see a linear term in all regions of the phase diagram, suggesting that there's no evidence for any additional complex component to the order parameter, which might lead to a fully gapped Fermi surface. As far as the doping dependence of the gap maximum from our thermal conductivity measurements, we see that in overdoped to optimally doped, delta zero scales with TC, so in agreement with BCS theory, whilst beyond optimally doped into the underdoped regime, we see a failure of BCS theory with this deviation in that the gap maximum increases whilst TC decreases. Yeah?
This label assuming a simple deviation form for the gap.
That's right.
Is there any independent evidence that that's true?
There is some ARPES measurements where actually they, in BISCO, where they tend to fit to higher harmonic terms in the D-wave order parameter. But I don't think that they really go down into the very low energy regions of the gap. So it's difficult, I think, to compare there.
It's very subtle dependent.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't think it's
understood. No.
There are faults in the normal states, but what you imagine for your data pure.
You think it's unlikely that one would have a pure D wave system?
I don't know. I just don't know what to think about it. But I think what getting a pure D wave type shape from our normal state that starts off with arcs.
It starts off with?
Arcs.
Aha, uh-huh, yeah. Okay, so that's right. If we want to start playing with what the band structure is, yeah, I don't think we can really really comment very much on what the underlying band structure may be doing. Yeah. But I think the point here is that if one just takes the most basic assumptions, then really we seem to be getting some sort of fairly sensible picture from our thermal conductivity measurements. Some comments about what kind of gap we might be making here and its relation with the pseudo-gap is that given the agreement between the pseudo-gap and our measurements, it's likely that where our measurements are made deep within the superconducting state, it's likely that the superconducting gap and the pseudo-gap come from a common origin. It's also true that the pseudo-gap is likely to be a quasi-particle gap, not just a spin gap. It must have nodes, otherwise we wouldn't be able to establish this formalism, and it must also have a linear dispersion in this sense, but maybe one could look at higher order corrections and one wouldn't stray too much from this picture. And finally, we note that LSCO is different. It's non-universal, which may be due to disorder, intrinsic disorder, but also let's not rule out the possibility of some competing order. So let's now move to the underdoped regime, the pseudo-gap. Oops, missing a bit of a U there, I think. And what we know, really, from in transport terms anyway, basically is only from these pulse magnetic studies done many years ago by Bobinger on LSCO. And what people know is that as one moves beyond optimal doping into the underdoped regime, the system basically becomes an insulator. So the question that I'd like to pose now is whether this is driven by a competing order or whether it's maybe due to the intrinsic disordering which comes about from doping. And let's see, how long do I have left?
15 minutes,
okay, that's plenty of time. So this insulating behavior is actually corroborated by our own thermal conductivity measurements. And here we see the thermal conductivity across the whole doping regime, so from overdoped, optimally doped, underdoped, two underdoped samples, a non-superconducting sample, and the parent Mott insulator. And the red curves are at zero field, and the blue curves are with an applied field of 13 tesla, so driving one either into the normal state where the doping is small enough, where the TC is small enough, or at least into the mixed phase where one can't quite reach the normal state. And what one sees is that overdoped and optimally doped, one gets an increase in thermal conductivity when one applies a field, suggesting that the state is headed towards a more conducting or metallic state in the normal state. But when one moves into the underdoped region, you can see immediately that the thermal conductivity now decreases when one applies a magnetic field. And at 6%, where we can actually access the normal state, we find that we go from what is basically a metallic state, that is, it has a finite linear conduction in the superconducting state, to an insulator, that is, with an error bar, the thermal conductivity, the electronic thermal conductivity, drops to zero in the normal state. And I say zero with an error bar because it's, the statement would be that the normal state here is as thermally insulating as either a non-superconducting variant at 5% doping or the parent insulator, where one sees no field dependence at all. So one could look at this another way and basically plot the variation of the residual linear term as a function of magnetic field. And what one sees is that for higher dopings above, for optimal doping above, one has an increase, suggesting one's going to a thermally more metallic phase, whereas in low doping, one sees this decrease, suggesting that one's going to a more insulating phase as one drives the superconductivity away with a magnetic field. So whether this might be disorder or order is also explored in, or a competing order, is also explored in other measurements. So the, for example, these neutron scattering measurements by Bella Lake and co-workers, where they see a growth of magnetic order as one applies magnetic field. Or more recently, these are ARPES measurements by the Ziyech Shen's group, where they measure this small gap in LSCO at very low dopings, which is basically suppressed as one heads towards the superconducting state. So these would be evidence for some kind of competing order, which is insulating, which you reveal as you destroy superconductivity. So now what I'd like to do is move to a comparison between this LSCO state and some very clean samples of YBCO, where one has much lower levels of disorder, and ask the question that if we have some mobile, must mobile holes pair? That is, can we have a region in this low doping area of the phase diagram where one has mobile holes, but they don't actually end up pairing to form a superconducting state? And we're going to do this first by looking at samples which are just to the left of the critical doping for superconductivity, both in zero field, and then we'll apply a magnetic field and drive it towards the normal state to see what kind of state we will uncover in the absence of superconductivity, and compare it with LSCO. And then later we'll look at a sample which is just the other side of this superconducting critical point and ask the question, what kind of state do we have here? Do we have evidence for any metallic behavior? So in the superconducting state first, here's the data. So again, thermal conductivity divided by temperature is a function of T to the, some power law. I've picked some intermediate power law such that these curves, roughly speaking, both look linear on this kind of scale. And the YBCO sample has a TC of 9 Kelvin. The LSCO sample has a TC of 5 Kelvin. Thanks. And what we notice immediately is that in zero field, YBCO and LSCO are both metallic, and that's relatively consistent with what one would expect for a nodal quasiparticles. And when one applies a field, we know from previous work that I just showed you that LSCO decreases to become this insulating phase, but actually there's no effect of magnetic field on the thermal transport of YBCO in this state. So YBCO seems to be remaining metallic, although we can't tell whether we've reached a normal state or not just from this measurement alone, whereas LSCO is definitely being driven insulating. So one question you might ask is that in the superconducting state, can we make sense of this value of the magnitude of the residual linear term, going back to this plot here? So if I convert that magnitude to a superconducting gap, then what I find is that I get an energy, a gap, which is about 160 MeV. So this is pretty large, but maybe on a scale of the in-plane exchange coupling which one has for in the parent magnetic insulator, it's perhaps not a completely ridiculous value. And certainly no one knows exactly how one should extrapolate the curve here. A straight line is not at all obvious that that's what one should have. And I'll come back to that point a little bit in a minute. So now let's... So we've looked at here, and we put a magnetic field on, so we drove it towards its normal state. So now let's go the other way. So let's explore what happens in this region just below the superconducting critical doping. So what we see is that in LSCO we get this well-known result that there's no residual linear term. The thing is an electronic insulator. But now, importantly for YBCO, we find that we still have metallic conductivity. So immediately we have a huge contrast between LSCO, which seems to prefer to be driven insulating, whether one applies a magnetic field from within the superconducting state, or whether one just decreases the doping and moves towards the parent compound and out of the superconducting state, or whether, whereas in contrast, YBCO seems to remain metallic in all of these regions of phase space.
What does the electrical conductivity look like?
So here, the inset is the electrical conductivity. Now, we don't actually have it, so then the follow-up question would be, what's the Wiedemann-Franz law? Yeah, I can see where you're going. Now, we're having a few problems with getting some sensible measurements of the absolute magnitude of the electronic conductivity, the charge conductivity in resistivity, but I think within a few months we'll have that number and be able to answer that question. But if we just look at the temperature dependence in some normalized sense, where the two are normalized to be one here, and contrast the YBCO with the LSCO, here LSCO is definitely showing this insulating transition, whereas on this kind of scale, although there may be some moderate insulating behavior, certainly it's nothing like this insulating behavior we see in LSCO. But as far as the Wiedemann-Franz law goes, I can't answer that question at the moment, I'm afraid.
Is there any data on what the spins are doing?
Yeah, not so much. Not at these low dopings as yet, no, that's right. It's a question of getting big enough samples, I think. They've worked hard to do it at the ortho 2, so at about 6.5 oxygen. And then it's a bit debatable whether people are really seeing some kind of magnetic ordering or not. Depends who you talk to and how much water's in your sample, things like that, as to what's going on.
Is one absolutely sure that YBC is also not going to go insulating at lower temperature? I mean, to me, these two do not look that different. It's just where, you know, where they change behavior. If you go above 1.5, they're identical. Yeah. And there is certainly some scale, you know, where things change, and that scale happens to be lower at YBC.
Yeah, maybe that is what will happen.
I would say that it will go insulating based on my last experience looking at
data. Okay, so if we went to low enough temperatures, you'd be able to drive
it. It's not that low. Why haven't we gone down there?
This is fine. Yeah, this
that's
is
a couple of hundred millikelvin, right? That's where it stops.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think we have to improve these measurements for sure. But I don't know. If most people would look at this and say this isn't quite the same behavior that you're seeing there.
But if most people stop at 1.5 Kelvin, okay, I mean, that's a facetious statement. If most people stop at 1.5 Kelvin, then also there's no difference between the two either.
Well,
so it depends on what temperature you're looking at, is the point I'm making.
Sure. But if this were to go insulating, then we definitely have a violation of the Wiedemann-Franz law, which is really pretty dramatic, I think.
Well, if you assume that both the resistivity and the thermal conductivity have sort of saturated, more or less,
yeah,
so no tension then, what's actually the ratio?
Yeah, well, as I say, we can't give you a hard number here because for some sort of technical reasons, which I can discuss with you afterwards, but no, I can't make a statement on that. Yeah.
Can you do contribution from chain? Yeah, chain is poorly conducting.
Yes, that's right. So these are done. The train contribution in these systems, where we're actually at some very, very low doping, is likely to be pretty small, I think. These are very small little chainlets is all that you have left. But we can't rule out contributions to chains in this, yeah, for sure. But given the one-dimensional nature of them, if the planes were to be, if the chains are going to be much more susceptible to disorder than the planes. So I would think their contribution to conductivity might be very small. But you're right, I can't actually rule that out. Okay, so let's go the right way. So now if we look at the overall doping dependence of these residual linear conductivities, so in LSCO what we know is that in the superconducting state, this is the critical doping for superconductivity to occur, that's where we start to recover some electronic conductivity due to these nodal quasiparticles. But in YBCO, it seems that the trend is that the conductivity seems to be dying continuously, even with no sign of any discontinuity or anything at the critical doping for superconductivity. And in fact, although we don't have any data in this region, looks like the trend should just continuously decrease as one heads towards zero doping. So now if I speculate a little bit and move to this inset where we just blow up this region here, we understand the magnitude of this transport within some kind of D-wave superconducting framework. So we know that this is nodal quasiparticles which have a nodal spectrum. So now I'm going to speculate that on the other side, given the same magnitude of conductivity that we have here, that maybe we have some kind of nodal metal in this region. So there are thermionic excitations which are governed by a similar spectrum to which one has in the superconducting state.
So both of these give you this very large value of delta, 160 MeV?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you can only really, I'd only fancy using it in the superconducting state, but if you just blindly applied that, the value of the linear term is almost identical, so yeah, it would do that. And actually, this linear sort of trend here means that when one looks at the plot of gap maximum versus doping, that's actually diverging, because that's one over this curve. Whereas a linear gap maximum versus doping really will end up with some kind of saturation at some finite linear term in the zero temperature axis there. Okay, so just finally, I think 2 minutes, yeah. Okay, just to look at compare the magnetic field dependence in these two systems. So YBCO, so let's start with LSCO, where I've already shown you that we have at optimally doping or above, one sees an increase in the residual linear conductivity as a function of magnetic field. And as one moves to lower doping, one moves into this thermal insulator type region. So one has some kind of phase space diagram, H against doping, one goes from a metal to an insulator. Conversely, for YBCO, we see again two regimes of behavior for magnetic field. At higher doping, one sees an increase in the thermal conductivity as a function of magnetic field. Whilst for these two very low doped samples, I've shown you the thermal conductivity is essentially constant. There is no dependence on magnetic field. So this may indicate that we really do have two types of metallic behavior. One goes from a sort of nodal metal to something perhaps more conventional metal as a function of doping. So let's just finally conclude then. In the superconducting state, so for dopings higher than this critical doping for superconductivity, both YBCO and LSCO exhibit metallic conductivity in the superconducting state due to these D-wave nodal quasiparticles. When one applies a field, YBCO remains metallic, whereas LSCO actually undergoes an insulating transition. If we then reduce the doping and look at this region just below the critical doping for superconductivity, again, the big result is that YBCO remains metallic, so some clear distinction between YBCO metallic and LSCO, which is insulating. And then as far as the doping dependence goes, we know that YBCO goes from a metallic state to remains metallic as one goes into the superconducting state. And by some sort of continuity argument, I'm proposing that maybe this metallic state here is perhaps this nodal metal state. Whereas LSCO, we know we drive the system insulating either by lowering the doping or by applying magnetic field to quench superconductivity. And whether this is this insulating state is really disorder or competing order, I think the jury may still be out. But certainly there's evidence for some insulating competing order from either the spin density wave stuff appearing as one applies a magnetic field from neutrons, or this nodal gap, which is revealed by ARPES measurements. Okay, so thank you very much.
Thank you. getting in your idea of competing orders in LSCO, if I look at the suppression of kappa with magnetic field, it looks sort of qualitatively similar to an increase of magnetic moment measured by neutron scattering.
Uh-huh.
That would be natural if I have some kind of volume fraction which controls both.
Right.
So is it possible to, let's say, feed this suppression of kappa by something like H log H, which they saw for neutron scattering?
We could certainly try, yeah. It might be interesting to do that. So you're just suggesting that it's basically a kind of geometric factor argument, basically just a volume effect. Yeah, we can certainly try.
I had a clarification question. Is your statement that there is metallic non-superconducting state in YBCO, is that really based on just one type of sample, one underdoped sample, or is it a range of underdoped samples that are metallic and non-superconducting?
Yeah, it's a few samples that we've measured in this region of very low doping.
It is over a range of doping. Or is it at one doping?
Yeah, well, the thing is, you see, what happens with these samples is that over time, they anneal. And so one can study the evolution of the thermal conductivity in the same sample as one moves through this transition. But essentially, over the limited range of annealing that one gets in these samples, the thermal conductivity just doesn't change.
But it's the same sample.
Yeah.
Hi, this is just a comment. The data is very nice, and I think it establishes some differences that I think had not been appreciated before, in particular the fact that most of the so-called quasi-particle properties are, to a large extent, the same in many materials in the same family, even in different families, shows that this is a strong coupling system.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, the simple-minded BCS ideas should be taken with an enormous grain of salt.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's number one. Number two is that in the pseudo-gap regime, whereas ARPES shows a D-wave gap, there is no trace of any quasi-particle of any sort. And so the interpretation terms of quasi-particles, I think, is untenable. And even deep in the superconducting state, the so-called quasi-particles are extremely broad. Whether this is due to surface effects or this is intrinsic remains to be seen.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we should be a bit cautious with interpretation.
Okay.
You have some very low TC sample. I just wonder whether there's any data which, like a conductivity, thermal conductivity, whether when you across TC, whether how the curve looks like. Do you see any sign in the thermal conductivity when you raise temperature across TC?
Yeah, we really don't see much in the thermal conductivity as one goes across TC. And I think that mainly, the reason one sees such a big signature at higher dopings is because one's at a temperature where where the transport is dominated by electron-electron scattering.
Mm-hmm.
But when you reduce TC down to sort of below 10 Kelvin, to a few Kelvin, that's not really the case. I think maybe you're starting to be dominated by impurity scattering. And so the relative effect of the two types of scattering is much reduced. And so that's why you don't see a peak or anything like that.
Any more questions?
Maybe Leon?
Can you do Hall effect on these non-superconducting samples?
Yeah. I imagine that someone should try. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, the problem is that a lot of the Hall effect measurements have actually been done at much higher temperatures, and the signal gets extremely small at these very low temperatures. So one could try doing it at higher temperatures to start with, I guess, and I'm sure it won't be long before Ong probably does this. But I think at the moment there's sort of limited range of these samples, a limited number of these samples around, so it's probably just a question of time and patience, yeah, and this stuff will appear. Yeah.
Is it known that the 6.35 sample, that there's no magnetic ordering of any kind?
Yeah, I'm not so much aware of any really convincing evidence for much magnetism in these samples. I think there is some what's the word? What's the stuff they do at UBC?
MuSR.
MuSR, yeah, MuSR measurements, which may indicate this. But I think there's still a little bit of confusion about how the data is interpreted, actually.
Thanks. Okay, thank you.